We interrupt this broadcast with some important news.
Let's rewind and check out the biggest news stories from this week. It's time for Taiwan This Week.
Good evening and welcome to Taiwan This Week with me, your host Gavin Phipps. And I'm joined in the studio this evening by Sean Su.
It's great to be back.
And by Donovan Smith in Taichung.
Always great to be here.
And we'll begin with more members of the new cabinet being announced this week. And they include the heads of key economic, financial and science posts. Premier-designate Zhuo Rongtai announced that Topco Scientific co-founder and Topco Group chairman J.W. Gore will be taking over as economics minister, replacing the incumbent Wang Meihua. Paul Liu, the former chairman of PricewaterhouseCoopers Business Consulting Service here in Taiwan, has been appointed to the head of the National Development Council, replacing Gong Ming-shin. Peng Jin-long, an associate dean of the National Zhengzhou University's College of Commerce, has been appointed the new chairperson of the Financial Supervisory Commission. Huang Yang-nan, a research fellow with Academia Sinica's Research Centre for Information Technology Innovation, will replace Audrey Tung as the new Digital Affairs Minister, while U Jung-wen, the president of the Southern Taiwan University of Science and Technology, will become the new head of the National Science and Technology Council, replacing U Jung-jong. Now, the Liberty Times reported this morning, but these yet have to be confirmed, Acting Agriculture Minister Chen Junji will become Agriculture Minister. Former Deputy Cabinet Secretary General He Pei-shan will take over as Labour Minister. And former DPP lawmaker Cho Tai-yen will be appointed Health Minister. Meanwhile, this week, Tsai Ing-wen broke with protocol, where she confirmed that the Lai administration's new picks for Foreign Minister is, well, Lin Jialong, while the current Foreign Minister, Joseph Wu, has been named as the Secretary General of the National Security Council. We mentioned them last week, but they hadn't been confirmed then. Now, the KMT has called into question the appointment of J.W. Gore as economics minister, describing him as a morally dubious character who has close ties to China, but also is a donor to the DPP. Now, the KMT said that Gore was indicted and found guilty of contravening the Securities and Exchange Act in 2005 after violating accounting regulations. And it went on to say several other things about him. Now, while Gore hasn't commented on those charges, on Thursday, he did respond in kind to a move by the KMT to remove legal limits on applications for extending nuclear reactor life. And according to the incoming economics minister, he's held talks with industry leaders, businesses and experts regarding energy concerns. And he said that any decision as to whether to extend the life of the island's three nuclear power plants will be based on safety and a public consensus. But he did go on to say that his office will compile a report on the issue after he takes office on May the 20th. Meanwhile, Environment Minister Xue Fu Sheng will not be part of the new cabinet, as this week he announced that he will be stepping down after the May 20th inauguration and returning to academia. Now, Premier-designate Zhuo Rongtai has failed to name a new environmental minister so far, and that has been leading to speculation that Xue would have remained in his post under the Lai administration. He oversaw, of course, the Environmental Protection Administration being upgraded to a ministerial status in August of last year. And after he said he will be returning to academia and not staying on, he laid out what he believes are the three most important issues that will face his successor. One will be the implementation of the new carbon fee system, as well as reducing carbon emissions. The second will be reducing plastic usage. And the third will be to find logistical solutions for waste processing issues. So, Donovan, more cabinet members there coming into play. And, of course, some of these cabinet ministers, they obviously won't be going to their first day on the job and going to the store cupboard to find paper clips and things, because obviously the economics minister will have to start work straight away, as will the digital minister. So let's pick one for you, Donovan. Let's pick the digital minister, the new digital minister, Huang Yan-nan. And what do you think that he'll be doing on the first day at work?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of cybersecurity issues going on right now, obviously, because, you know, Taiwan is the front line against China and their digital infiltration. And Taiwan apparently suffered more cyber attacks than any other country on the planet. So, I mean, cybersecurity has got to be something right from the get-go. Now, also, you know, we've had recently, there was this whole issue of the celebrity who bought some images of underage sex acts off of a website, and that went through a whole bureaucratic process involving the digital ministry, which seems very convoluted. Now, obviously, Audrey Tong is an extremely, extremely smart individual and very creative, and has come up with some very stunning solutions pretty much on the fly, including, you know, the ability to find masks during the pandemic and these kinds of things. So, in a sense, Audrey Tong is a hard act to follow. On the other hand, Audrey Tong has been accused of overspending on their offices and not necessarily playing well with the normal bureaucracy. So integrating the digital ministry with other ministries in a way that maybe they'll find more palatable or is actually probably quite likely the first task right out of the gate for the digital ministry. So, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. But there's a lot that the digital ministry can do because the remit is so broad and there's so much going on digitally right now. So
I actually think that the funding for the digital ministry should be increased. I do know that there was accusations that Audrey had spent too much, but I mean, digital is part of all of our lives every day. You know, we wake up with our cell phones. We go to sleep with our cell phones. You know, we rely on them for all sorts of communications day to day. It's the thing that's closest to you. It's practically underwear. Given how critical it is, for Taiwan's economy, that if anything, it should be increased. Now, I think I will miss Audrey very much because they were able to really whenever it called for it. For example, during COVID, and we needed mass distribution systems, alert systems, all sorts of that, things like that. Their team was able to put that together so quickly, impressively too. It made world media, you know, even in Japan, they were covering, and there were lots of commenters saying that, you know, we wish we had somebody like Audrey. So when you install a new bureaucrat that, you know, has a great academic background in this field, we're not sure if we're going to see the same kind of tech hackers, you know, be employed. That said, I do think they should have a team, a quick response team, to deal with things like this. So if I were, you know, the new digital minister, that would be something I would probably do, which is try to put together a crack team, quick response team for all sorts of scenarios that will pop up in Taiwan's future.
And Sean, I'm aware about J.W. Gore as taking over as economics minister. I mean, he could be quite busy. I mean, we had some power outages this week.
Yeah, these are, you know, when it comes to like energy and everything, Taiwan is heavily dependent on energy, especially when it comes to, you know, because of the tech sector. TSMC alone takes up like 6% of the power, I believe, something like that. 6% of all the power we have in Taiwan, and that's not counting all the other factories and stuff we have. So economics is heavily tied with energy requirements. I do think that the DPP will have more of a switch to being more open to newer nuclear consumer technologies like small medium reactors, SMRs, things like that. Now, I know traditionally in the past, the DPP is painted as being very anti-nuclear, you know, against, you know, large nuclear power plants, but SMRs have a pretty good track record. The military has plenty of them in nuclear submarines and everywhere, in aircraft carriers, and because they're self-contained units, they're easy to transport around. They might be more palatable because you're not stuck with spent nuclear being stuck in one area per se. We can move it around. And yeah, again, energy is something we drastically need. Per kilowatt versus, you know, deaths or health problems, nuclear is right down there with wind and solar. Whereas coal, which is what we have a lot of, and oil actually harms a lot of people, especially the byproducts. And it takes up so much space, it's hard to store. You know, from a national security standpoint, that's also another issue too. So I actually do think that the economics minister probably work with other departments on trying to make that sort of sneakily go through, in particular because it seems like the DPP recently has not outright, but sneakily, one can say. I don't think that's the best choice of words, considering maybe continuing one or two of our nuclear power plants that are a little old, but maybe refurbishing them and continuing them because of our rampant energy needs. It's also, you know, because without SAR economics, without running it, our factories, our chip factories especially, if they're not running, with clean, reliable power, our economy is going to be heavily impacted.
And Donovan, what do you think the economics minister will be doing off the bat?
Well, actually, the J.W. Guo has already announced what he's going to do. He's right now conducting a review of power needs and water needs. And, of course, both are critical, as Sean has noted. I believe, actually, TSMC is projected in the next few years to be over 10% alone, over 10% of Taiwan's power needs. In I believe it's 12 or 14%. I forget the exact number, but here in Taichung, you know, they greenlit a plant, and both the water and power needs was the equivalent of what hundreds of thousands of people in this city use. So, you know, and the amazing thing is that when you take a look at TSMC, TSMC is just one part of the semiconductor chain. There are, depending on, you know, first tier, second tier, third tier, depending on how many tiers you count it down, right in the first tier, you've got hundreds of companies supplying TSMC and that whole supply chain. And when you go downstream, it goes into the thousands of companies. So the chip industry is enormously power and water hungry. So, you know, obviously the econ minister coming in, does make a lot of sense. Now, as Sean noted, possibly, and he has specifically not ruled out possibly keeping one or more of the nuclear power plants online, but he was very specific to say that this needed a consensus with the public and stakeholders and the like. And if that happens, and if they can make it safe, and if they can figure out how to get past the deadlines on and the capacity issues on nuclear waste, then they might continue that. I mean, Sean brought up small modular nuclear reactors, and they, right now, none have been actually built. They're definitely a promising technology. They're not anywhere near as efficient as larger nuclear power plants. Actually, in the 1950s, they experimented with those, and what they found was that the bigger plants have more bang for your buck. However, Sean brought up an extremely crucial issue, which is that it's potentially possible that with a small modular unit, they could be moved, which in the event of, say, a war, could be quite important, assuming that you've got the infrastructure in different places around the country to hook it up to the power grid. Now, there's also, still there's nuclear waste issues, there's still heat and water issues, because they need both to keep them functioning and safe. But anyway, but fundamentally what you do have is, in spite of the ethics issues that have been raised about the coming econ minister and the concerns about his company has 12 branch offices in China and 5 subsidiaries in China. All of these things may disqualify him before he even takes office, because there has been a lot of complaints coming from the KMT side. And, you know, these are pretty serious concerns. So he may or may not actually make it to office. But it does sound like, from what he's been talking about as far as his priorities and what he wants to do right from the get-go when he gets into office, they do sound pretty focused on core issues.
But of course, Donovan, they've yet to name a new environment minister, but the outgoing minister this week, of course, said he believes there are 3 important issues that the incoming one should face straight away. So what do you think the incoming environment minister will be focusing on?
Well, not knowing who it is and the mystery person not having made any comments, we don't really know. I mean, the three issues that the outgoing minister is recommended are certainly issues. The view here from Taichung is probably air pollution is a really big issue. This was what the mayor here was elected on and won re-election on. Now, of course, that means tackling the Taichung power plant, which, and this, of course, runs into other ministries, because Thai Power is not managed by the environmental ministry at all. So probably there's very little that the environmental ministry can do about this issue, which then, therefore, it makes a little bit more sense, the three priorities, which I don't think are actually the three biggest priorities that the government needs to focus on, but I think those are the three that plausibly the environmental ministry can actually focus on, rather than what the government should be focusing on in general.
Sure.
There's a lot of things. Earlier, actually, the environmental minister, we mentioned power. That's going to be definitely one of their major issues, considering the planned phase out of nuclear power by 2025. So that's next year. And it's going to be very tough to actually have that happen, especially because renewables have not increased. I mean, they've increased a lot, but nowhere near enough to make 20% of our electricity come from renewable sources by next year. So that's also another practical problem that we will have to deal with. And that's something I don't think the environmental minister has a fun job, because none of their target goals, I think, is going to actually make it. But that's the case for around the world.
I also got the new carbon fee system, Sean, which is a bit of a mess, to put it politely.
This is, again, it's going to take some creativity, because at the same time, they have to contend with the fact that our national security and our national economy is dependent on the very same factories and agricultural industries that use up so much water and power. So you're trying to balance the lifeblood of our what puts food on the table alongside with, clean air and everything else, which we also need. Ironically, if your water sources are polluted, then your chips actually come out bad too. So it's a real big chicken and egg problem here. Again, if it was so easy to solve, it would be solved worldwide. This is not an easy job.
And of course, the outgoing environment minister talked about plastic usage being reduced.
Oh, yeah, we should. I feel like, even though I really love the fact that Taiwan has significantly declined the use of straws and other things like that, in a sense that makes it safer for the environment. For example, over the past 8 years, we've seen the caps of drink cups that you get from fast food restaurants. They're covered with, they're made so that you don't need a straw and you can sort of sippy cup it. Those things are actually a good thing, because apparently unlike straws, they don't get eaten as much by wildlife and, causing biological harm as much. However, the less plastic use, I mean, you go to a night market, you still get a plastic bag all the time. That's the exception, right? That's the balance I'm talking about, because they don't want to kill the night markets because they'll lose votes. So they don't want to offend the vendors too much. So you still get straws, you still get the same old plastic bags, and all these items that are just everywhere. That is the main problem. And, for bubble tea shops, a lot of them still give you straws, plastic straws. So I don't know. I really think they need to actually find better solutions to crack down on this. I do know bubble tea shops, which are everywhere in Taiwan, they still say okay, if you bring your own straw or whatever, we might give you a small discount. But I have yet to see many people actually do this. There is a more improvement on that front, but if you actually go to any busy business district and during lunchtime, plastic use for utensils, for everyday food and stuff is still everywhere. So there needs to be some better creative solution on that. Either, tax write-offs or some sort of other thing to make them do it. Something really creative, the way our lottery receipt systems really did get a lot of people pushing businesses to pay their taxes, sales tax. I think we need some similar idea to lead the world in this.
Moving on now, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs this week announced details of the May 20th inauguration ceremony for President-elect Lai Ching-te. This year's presidential inauguration will be the first proper one, we'll use the word proper one just because we can, since 2016, as 2020's inauguration of Tsai Ing-wen for her second term in office was rather muted, as of course the COVID, coronavirus, Wuhan flu, or whatever name you choose to have given it at the time, was causing all sorts of problems around the world. And of course, social distancing was a thing, and Taiwan's borders were closed to most people. Now, that event took place at the Taipei Guest House and was attended by a very few people who were seated in the guest house's garden a metre away from each other. Now, Foreign Minister Joseph Wu this week has said that eight leaders of countries with formal diplomatic ties with Taiwan will be attending President-elect Lai's inauguration ceremony. The Foreign Minister went on to say that a total of 40 missions from diplomatic allies and like-minded countries will attend the ceremony, and the number of guests so far stands at around 400. Now, the guest list includes parliamentarians, speakers and foreign ministers, and a couple of US representatives have said they're also coming. Now, the inauguration ceremony will be held at the presidential office in Taipei, as was precedent prior to the COVID. However, the presidential office has said the reception and banquet will be taking place in Tainan, and that will be the first time a state banquet for an inauguration has taken place outside of the capital. So, Sean, 400 people on a guest list so far, and everyone's going to be in Tainan food at the banquet.
I think given the history of Bi Kim-shiao and of course, the incumbent president, having been in Tainan so much, having had much of their careers around there or their upbringing there, I think this is actually good precedent, because we shouldn't have, Taiwan politically be so Taipei-centric. Tainan is where Lai Ching-te previously was mayor of Tainan. He was a legislator there, too. Bi Kim-shiao basically grew up there in her childhood. Her father was, president of a seminary college there too as well, and her mother was like a music teacher there too. So this they do have a big history in Tainan, and that's one of their big political groups and the base of, I guess, DPP support for the Pan Greens. So I think it's very suitable that they did this. Plus, not to mention, I believe the hotel that they're having this banquet with was a bot project that began under Lai's mayorship. So I think it all kind of fits, and it does send a good message.
Carbon emissions. How are they going to get there, Sean? They're going to drive there.
They're not definitely not going to drive there, given the way it is. I mean, it would also be interesting if they, took the high speed rail, which is yet another project that it would be more green, I guess, than taking planes or helicopters. But the reality is, security is also very important. So yeah, I do imagine that they will be taking some sort of aerial vehicle there.
More pollution.
Even more pollution. But in the bigger picture, compared to TSMC, what produces and these other companies, what they produce, this is not even a drop in the bucket, to be honest.
Of course, they could take new bikes there.
Yes, that would be so fascinating. Imagine they all just started like renting a U-bike. I would pay just to see Lai Ching-te take out like an easy card to activate his U-bike.
And Donovan.
As Sean noted, obviously, Xiao Bi Kim, she was born in Japan but grew up there, so it makes sense for her. And by the way, when you know that her mother was a music teacher, her name makes a lot more sense, because the Bi Kim part is basically a beautiful musical instrument. William Lai, he made his name politically in Tainan. So, and of course, what they also wanted to, and they stressed this quite a bit when they made the announcement, is that they want to emphasize Taiwan's diversity and show Taiwan in a somewhat different light than I think that most foreign guests get. And by moving it from Taipei, where almost everything diplomatic always happens, to Tainan, they're setting a different tone. Now, what I think will be very interesting is, what kind of foods do they serve? What kind of entertainment will they have? Will this highlight the diversity that they say they want to? How they'll get there, you and Sean have already discussed. One thing I'm watching for is, I'm very curious to see if or who India sends to this event, because I think that will be quite telling. In the 2020, during the COVID, they had some key figures in the BJP who did virtually attend. But I'm quite curious to see, now right now, obviously, India is very distracted with their election, but post-election, they'll probably be a little bit more focused. will they send senior MPs or not? I'm very curious to see that.
And Sean Donovan mentioned the menu there. What do you reckon is going to be on the menu?
I'm going to bet it's going to be classical, common Taiwanese, Tainan dishes. So, of course, there will be somewhat of a Tainan flavor. So I think a lot of people will be commenting about how the food's going to be a little bit more, a tad sweeter than normal, fitting its reputation. That's just my speculation. The reason is because Tainan is known as a good food destination. Now, are they going to eat like tua bing or things like that? I don't know. I don't think so. But I do think as a political statement, they're definitely going to find some foods that are very, very local to Tainan.
And moving away from the politics now, well, maybe just a little bit, lawmakers this week accused the government of failing to stop the spread of images of minors and secretly filmed content and its slow response to cases involving voyeurism and sexual exploitation. It follows widespread criticism of the handling of a high-profile case involving television presenter Mickey Huang. Now, police seized 7 sexual explicit videos involving minors from Huang's hard drive following raids on his residence and studio last year. Reports have said that Huang purchased videos from between August of 2017 and July of last year from an online platform known for illegal images featuring both secret photographs and child pornography. Huang avoided prosecution, though, by paying a 1.2 million NT fine and writing an apology letter for buying videos of a sexually explicit content involving minors. Now, KMT lawmaker Tu Chuan Ji this week said prosecutors indicted several individuals in early 2022 on charges of sharing illegal content via the same online platform. But the Ministry of Digital Affairs only ordered the Network Information Centre to cut access to the platform on April the 10th of this year after receiving an administrative order from the Ministry of Health. Now, Health Minister Shui Ruiyuan is defending his office, saying that the Child and Youth Sexual Exploitation Prevention Act was amended in 2023 and legal provisions to force 118 days ago were different to those which are in effect now. And he also argued that to carry out an administrative order without adhering to regulations posed legal risks and said the move was made as a last resort, not as a result of negligence. Now, Huang's deferred prosecution also draws strong criticism from women's rights groups, lawmakers, government officials, and including the Ministry of Justice there, and just about everybody else. And the leniency of his punishment has sparked calls for amendments to the Child and Youth Sexual Exploitation Prevention Act. Now, the Taipei District Prosecutor's Office has said the deferred prosecution involving Huang has been forwarded to a higher prosecutorial authority and is now being reviewed by the Taiwan High Prosecutor's Office. So, Sean, I mean, they knew this was going on, and it took two government agencies, a prosecutor's office, and a subdivision of an agency to close this website down or deny access to use for it.
Yeah, the coordination, I mean, I'm just imagining what the new cabinet's going to have to do because all these things are interministerial, right? There's a lot of resources being developed for something that is basically a crime issue. So I do agree with people who say that, you know, this should be prosecuted under, like, the police. They should have just arrested him, you know, and instead of having to involve all these ministries. And I actually agree. I mean, it's a crime. It's that simple. But the solutions are not necessarily easy, especially because, you know, there's a lot, you know, with the advent of AI, a lot of these imagery could be digitally generated. Whether or not there's victims is one thing, but I do think that the punishment, even though it's been increased, is still ridiculously, you know, the liability is just no more than 1 year punishment in prison. I do feel that given the harm it can bring, that we should increase the amount of punishment in there. I do think it is ridiculous that Mickey only had to pay a fine
and write a letter.
But for him, this is not a lot of money. And that's, it's kind of like if you tell somebody, okay, well, you were caught with child pornography, we're going to fine you 10 cents. It becomes like a joke. And I do understand that a lot of Taiwan's fines are not very high. So 1.2 million Taiwan dollars might seem like a lot for some, but given how wealthy he is, this is a drop in the bucket. Yeah, I do think jail time should be there. I do think there should be a far more efficient process. You know, you should be able to report to a direct hotline and say, okay, there, you know, somebody has child pornography, or this is, you know, this whole entire convoluted process makes it also difficult to report it, because if you report it, you know you're not going to get justice until months, years later at least. And, you know, this whole entire system needs to be fixed, because that's not something we want to have as Taiwan's image in the future. That's not something, you know, Taiwan needs to be known for. It's not, but it could be if we don't put a check on it quickly.
And Donovan.
Yeah, I mean, Taiwan has it has a lot of checks and balances in place, but also you could call them bureaucratic obstacles, kind of depending on how you look at it. But the thing is that after coming out of the martial law era, anything that might or could impede free speech, free expression, the system is made to be difficult to interfere with that. So, I mean, obviously, a case of child pornography is, you know, not exactly what we would consider healthy free expression. So, you know, I think that really what they need, you know, the laws need to be clear. There needs to be a clear chain of command on how to deal with something like this. And there needs to be clear definitions on what it is and how to move forward on it speedily, because, you know, these involve real people's lives, underage people's lives. So some speed and, you know, it does matter. It does matter that Taiwan does care a lot about free speech and free expression and protecting that. But in cases like this, I do think that some legal clarity and a clear chain of command on how to deal with this issue specifically should be codified into law, so that they can, as Sean noted, move quickly and speedily on these issues.
And another aspect of this, Donovan, of course, is whether Mickey Huang's career is over, or will, you know, people that employ him see that he's been fined $1.2 million and had to write a letter and think that this is no big issue to continuing to employ him and put his face on television?
Well, I haven't exactly followed his career. I'd never heard of him until this all came up. Obviously, this is very scandalous. You know, but you know, obviously, he was purchasing the images. He didn't do the acts himself, but it's still pretty horrible. Now, at some point, does any human being deserve forgiveness for certain things? I don't know. That's a very hard one when you're talking about minors. Not that he directly did anything to any minors that we're aware of, but purchasing the images, again, there were victims. So I'm going to go with probably he's not going to be rehired. He probably shouldn't. But, you know, at some point, maybe they'll reconsider the issue in years down the line. I don't know.
Who knows? People might forget. There's a lot of people in Hollywood that are pedophiles that have gotten away with it. You know, some, like Roman Polanski is a good example. You know, or inappropriate things done by, I mean, the list is really long, just put it that way. And there's even scandals coming out right now regarding that. But in regards to Taiwan, like, I just want to emphasize that I do like that the act they passed last year does say that people who distribute it will get 5 years, up to maximum 5 years in prison. I mean, that's an improvement. And those who possess have 1 year. I just want to clarify that, up to 1 year in prison. For somebody like Mickey, you know, they have a lot of resources. They can rehabilitate their image. They will hire PR organizations. Yes, he's come out and said that it's affected his mental health. What I really wonder was, you know, his mental health was never right in the first place to actually, you know, go for it and buy this stuff. And buying this perpetuates a market, and that market will produce more victims. And then, you know, even deepfakes in Taiwan are considered the same thing, because eventually they will probably be trained on similar material, or it will produce a market that might expand and actually hurt more children. This is, for me, this topic, you know, is a little bit sensitive, but also I feel strongly about. We do need a clear definition. There needs to be a simplified process. How streamlined? It should be if it's reported and it's confirmed by a department, by the police, they should immediately be able to give a notification where ISPs could immediately block them or start monitoring those that have been found or suspected of it. Yes, there needs to also be an overriding governing body to ensure, as a check and balance, that this is not being used to, let's say, censor people. For example, I can't say, let's say, the Communist Party in Taiwan. They might say something in favor of the PRC. Does that mean I can call that, you know, CSAM, child exploitative materials, by saying, well, they're trying to influence kids into communism in favor of the CCP? No, that's not going to work, right? Somebody has to step in and say that's political. That has nothing to do with explicit imagery. So that's something that needs to be there too as well. And we should have these bodies created immediately and as fast as possible.
And before we go this week, supporters and opponents of plans to rezone the famous Jingguo Beer Factory in Taipei held competing rallies on Tuesday. Both protests took place outside the offices of the National Land Management Agency. The factory site has produced beer since 1919 and was in fact the first and only beer factory in Taiwan during the Japanese colonial era. Needless to say, some changes have been made over the preceding decades to keep it up to date, but beer is still produced there today. And the Taipei City Government designated the factory as a historic site in 2000, and the Taiwan Tobacco and Liquor Corporation and the city government unveiled plans to transform the factory into a beer culture park in 2018. However, that proposal was withdrawn last year, and earlier this year, the Ministry of the Interior proposed that some areas within the factory compound be given to the nearby National Taipei University of Technology in order that it be able to expand its campus. Now, opponents of the move are arguing that the factory is a major historical site and as such should be kept, while supporters of the rezoning plan say the university doesn't have enough facilities at the moment, and that's affecting its research and development potential, and it should be allowed to move into the factory compound to expand. Now, this story would likely not have got much big national news coverage here had DPP lawmaker Wang Shijian not gone verbally ballistic at a hearing, footage of which got blanket coverage on cable television news channels, Sean.
Yeah, I think he was a little bit interrupted by somebody, you know, sort of heckling in the background, and he got really mad, and then he pounded the table, and, you know,
he did a bit more than that.
Oh, yeah, he did. But to be fair, you know, these are kind of things lawmakers do to help stir up a little bit of drama. It's no different from legislators having food fights, you know, in the LY, and then later, you know, having beers together after work, you know, so the saying goes pretty much. And I think some points he has are justified. Like, he can say that, okay, the reason why this place is popular is because they have a live house there. It's a place where a lot of people have good memories, hanging out with their friends, you know, drinking together at the live house that they have there. But on the other hand, I do kind of get that it does have historical value. Being that for a long time, and it was basically one of Taiwan's exclusive beer factories. However, it does look a little run down. I feel like some parts of it, you know, feels like it could fit in scenes straight from the new Fallout TV series on Amazon right now, I think. Amazon Prime. And it's just not a little run down. And in terms of whether or not universities should be able to, you know, ask the government, okay, we need more land near because we have more students than ever. You know, can you give it to us? I feel like the bigger problem is mismanagement of Taipei. Songshan Airport basically requires a lot of buildings around Taiwan, a lot of neighboring districts to be low. That way planes can have, civilian planes can have ease of access. The big problem with that is that for such a dense city, especially Daan District, we can't build buildings tall enough. And the Taipei University of Technology recently built a whole new complex of buildings, but none of them are really tall. And they should be in order to fill all the resources it needs, all the labs and stuff that they require. And so we keep building these like low or mid-rises that, you know, are under like 20 stories. Many of these are even less than 10 stories in these large spaces that would probably have been better utilized if we had better building codes and smarter building codes through Taipei. And that, I think, is the real problem here, forcing, you know, universities or companies to try to use different, you know, eminent domain or what have you, to try to say like, okay, let's tear this down so I could, you know, expand. I think that's the bigger problem. Plus, I mean, what's stopping from the university from expanding elsewhere, outside into New Taipei or even other areas? Other universities have done the same thing. They have multiple campuses. Not to mention, it's the same thing for the beer factory, too. It can be relocated into a better suitable area, you know, instead of around Ba Der Lu in the very busy district of Taiwan, where, you know, they have all these open spaces that are underutilized. The poor utilization of space in Taipei is the cause of a lot of these issues.
Well, these are Taipei people problems. You know, what I found interesting is in the news coverage of this story, they didn't really show the building, you know, on the TV news. There was just a brief cutaway in one piece. Now, the factory itself goes back to the Japanese era, but from what I understand, the building goes back to the 40s or 50s, the current building. Now, I haven't seen it, or if I have, I don't remember it. Again, the TV news didn't really show it. The news reports I read about it didn't show the building. So it's really kind of hard to comment on the historical, you know, value of a building from the 40s or 50s, even though it has a pedigree on the site going back to the early Japanese era. So, I think that's really more up to historians to be able to comment on, because I've got zero to work off of as to the historical value or relevance of the building. And again, how many other historical sites does Taipei have from that era? I don't have a comparative analysis of that, because there does need to be a balance between preserving a certain amount of buildings and things from certain eras. On the other hand, you don't want to have to preserve every single one of them because you want the city to advance and develop. And, of course, education is, you know, one of the best reasons to possibly expand. So I don't really have any opinion either way at this point due to a lack of information. Here in Taichung, there's still enough land and the redevelopment zones, so it's not really an issue here. So again, I'm just going to say Taipei people problems.
But what, I mean, how do they handle old buildings, historic sites in Taichung?
Some of them are kept, some of them are torn down. Recently, for example, the American officers, their entertainment club that they had was eventually preserved after protests from citizens. But the difference between that case and this case is it was not so much that there was big plans for some public institution to use that space. It was private developers who probably wanted to build condos or something like that. And Taichung has a lot of open land from the redevelopment zones that were farmland recently. I look out my window and I live near two redevelopment zones and there are high rises popping up like crazy. So, we have a very different set of priorities and a very different set of problems here in Taichung than in Taipei.
Nearby where this factory is Huasan Park, and that is done very well. It is an art and culture center, so in that aspect it does very well. The factory size in the complex in Taipei is not that big. It's again really run down looking. Of all the basically, they could probably do better. I can understand parts from both sides. It's a really difficult, complex problem because I do understand that the university definitely needs more space. I do understand that they can't build higher because of Songsan Airport and other regulations in the area. At the same time, that beer factory is not particularly modern. The Japanese part of that is a much smaller area that's sandwiched between newer buildings that are frankly built in the 40s and 50s during the Chiang Kai-shek era, but they're also notoriously ugly, to be honest. I don't know if they should be kept around because by most normal standards, it looks like an eyesore, but that's my personal opinion, you know, and that could be upgraded as well. Wang did point out that in Civic Boulevard nearby, there's just a whole line of you know, big beer joints and bars. And it's true, like half along, you know, Civic Boulevard, there's just hundreds of them. So this location, if you look in pictures and what have you, it seems to be an older crowd, maybe that feels nostalgic about it, that really supports it being there. Frankly, I think they could preserve some parts of it. And I do think parts of the factory could be moved out. They could preserve some of the old buildings. But the Japanese part of that building is the complex is, again, been modified so much that there's very little to preserve, I think. And for university space, maybe they could come to like a sort of 50-50 compromise. And I think that's probably what might come about. So they can kind of keep both. I think that maybe would be the best solution to keep everybody happy. At the same time, they really need to modernize the entire area. It's just kind of ugly. It's really an eyesore.
Something I can add. This is definitely a problem here in Taichung, and I suspect it's probably also a problem in Taipei, is that what they do is they preserve old buildings here in Taichung and they turn them into arts and culture spaces of some form or another. The problem is that they're now getting to a point where there's so many of these arts and culture spaces that they're running out of ideas to make good use of them, meaning there's only so many galleries and entertainment venues that you can cram into these historical buildings. So at some point, there may be just an overcapacity of arts and creative buildings in Taiwan.
Indeed. Like, look at Hualien. Hualien has one, like, in the center of the city, and it's very underutilized. I went there years ago, and it was bustling, full of activities. I've been going there recently, every so often, every few months, and it's empty. And so, yeah, it's not just you build it, and all of a sudden, it'll magically become better. Like I said, this one in particular is really, really, really ugly. I don't see how they're going to renovate it to a degree where it's going to be, you know, appealing to more people. And at the same time, you know, I do agree that universities need more space. But the bigger problem is long decades, if not almost more than half a century of mismanagement on building codes and with lack of foresight has resulted in all these land wars. So, you know, hopefully somebody will bite the bullet and make some change. But I don't know.
And that's where we'll leave it here this week on Taiwan This Week. And I've been joined in the studio today by Sean Su.
It's great to be back.
And from Taichung by Donovan Smith.
Always great to be here.
And thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Taiwan This Week here on ICRT with me, Gavin Phipps. And don't forget to check out Taiwan This Week podcast on your favourite podcast app where you can access all our previous shows.
Tune in again next Friday evening at 9 for another informative look at the top stories of the week with Taiwan This Week. And don't forget to also check out our podcast on our website, icrt.com.tw. Now keep it here for more music and news only on ICRT FM 100.